Marty Lurie here on Memories of the Game with Ken Harrelson, the Hawk. Boy, this game's been around 125 years, and really what makes it live on, the memories of baseball, the players who played, the stories. You were in some interesting situation with the Senators, the old Kansas City Athletics. You saw some old-time players who had played maybe in the 40s and 50s. When you came up, you got some good baseball memories.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, when you said 125 years, I've been around almost a third of that. Around the big leagues, so it's over those 40 years, it's been interesting. It really has, Marty. It's a situation that when I first broke in 1963, I was very young. And back in those days, you know, the caste system was certainly in place. And taking all that into consideration, you know, rookies came up and they didn't open their mouths. They didn't say anything. They get in there and they take how many swings they're supposed to take and get out. If you ever try to sneak an extra swing in there, you know, some veteran's going to jump all over you. But I guess the most interesting thing for me right now overall, in retrospect, looking back on my career, has been one of it's been really interesting, and it's been a wonderful experience for me to see the change in the evolution of baseball, the way it's gone around. The game today is really really entirely different than it used to be played. I'm certainly not saying we were right and they're wrong or vice versa. That's just the way it evolves, you know. And we're just a microcosm of society. So when society changes as it has, I think every sport has changed. It's not anywhere near like it was, you know, 40 years ago. I think one of the biggest things, you and I have discussed this before in the past, I think one of the biggest things that I know for sure is real is that the biggest change came during the Vietnam War. You know, when society really changed. And since that time, there has been so much more, to a different degree, of the attitude of the player. Certainly Marvin Miller was a huge instrument in changing the game of baseball. I think Marvin Miller, in my opinion, should be in the Hall of Fame. I really do. I think he is deserving of a place there. Although I don't think guy that took over for him should be at all. Not at all. But that's just my own opinion. There were some stories about players, you know, when I came up. I was fortunate enough to have played against Stan Musial, you know, and I got to know Joe DiMaggio very well and Ted Williams, you know. So when you're a guy who has been in that environment and get to know and meet all these great, great players and have the opportunity to talk and play golf with them like I did. You know, I played golf with DiMaggio quite a bit, and I played golf with Stan Musial, and Ted Williams and I have had the opportunity and pleasure to talk with him probably, you know, 50-100 hours on hitting when I was with the Red Sox. So the as far as my memories go, they're not in game situations or – the happiest year I ever had in my life was in 1967, being on a pennant winner, you know, and playing in probably what a lot of people consider to be the greatest pennant race in the history of baseball. When you had four teams, you had the Minnesota Twins, you had the White Sox, you had the Tigers and the Red Sox going into September within one game of each other. And we were fortunate enough to win on the last day of the season. We beat Minnesota on Saturday and Sunday. We beat Jim Cotton, Dean Chance to win a pennant, and then we went to the World Series, and we lost in seven games to the Cardinals. Bob Gibson beat us three times. But that, to me, was the most satisfying and gratifying year, even though the next year I had my personal best year, you know, being player of the year and leading the major leagues in RBIs, but it was nothing compared to 67, because that's what, you know, that's what every ball player wants to do, is go to the World Series.
Hawk, what about the first game you ever played in the major leagues? Because you look back, there are so many games, but that first one always is special for a player.
Yeah, I just got called up. I was in a terrible slump. I was in playing in Portland, and I had been hot prior to that. In fact, I broke the Pacific Coast League record for consecutive games homered in. And all of a sudden, I went into this slump for 4 or 5 days, and I mean, I couldn't hit the ground. And all of a sudden, Charlie Finley calls me up to the big leagues, and I flew in. I got there about the third inning of the ball game. They were playing the White Sox, and I pinch hit against Juan Pizarro and struck out. And then we were fortunate because that was getaway day, and then we went to Minnesota the very next day, and I'm in the lineup. And my first time up off Jim Cott, I got a base hit right back through the middle, and then later on I hit a home run. So I got all that out of the way, you know, in my first game. And then after that, you know, it was I was really called up too early. You know, 20 years old back in those days when there were 16 teams, Of course, Kansas City didn't have a powerhouse or a juggernaut or anything like that. And the year before, you know, I'd really done well in AAA. And the year before that, I'd done really well in AA. I think I hit, like, I don't know, over 60 home runs those 2 years. You know, I hit 38 in Eastern League and 28, 20-something in AAA. So I had some credentials. But, again, it didn't make any difference what you did coming up as a rookie. The only difference is that back in those days, the sporting news was the Bible of every baseball player in professional baseball. Everybody read it. So I was fortunate enough to have had a lot of exposure in the sporting news. So when I got to the big leagues, my first spring training camp, and even my first year when I was called up, you know, everybody knew who I was. And that made it a little easier entree. Plus, I had played in a golf tournament, you know, the Major League Baseball Players Golf Tournament in Miami, which at that time was a huge event. And, you know, my first year I finished second, and then the next year I won it, and then I won it the year after that, and I won it the year after that. So that brings you a little closer to the fraternity, so to speak, you know, because you have the chance to play with Mickey Mantle, and you had the chance to play with all these guys, you know, who participated in the golf tournament. So it was just a... I just couldn't have had a better entree. I just couldn't have had, you know, I was a lifetime 240 hitter, and the people say, well, that's not much. Well, I didn't have a whole bunch of ability. I mean, I could hit home runs, but, you know, I'm proud of every point of that, you know, because if I had more ability, then I would have hit more. It's just that simple. But I wouldn't change a day in my life around Major League Baseball. It's been the greatest thing in the world for me. I've never had another job, you know. It's been a wonderful thing. And then I love broadcasting now, going into my, what, this is my 28th year. So, you know, when you're involved in broadcasting that long, I love it more now than I ever have. People ask me, so, well, aren't you tired of the travel? Aren't you, isn't it a job? And it's not a job. It's a labor of love. Just like you. You love the game. You have some passion for the game. You and I have talked many times about it, and I'm the same way. I'm very passionate about baseball, and as I said, every year that I get older, I seem to have more passion for it. And I get a lot of emails and excuse me, and letters from former teammates of mine and former guys I played against who, you know, like today, we're on WGN, so there's going to be a lot of people who I played with and against that are going to be watching the game. And sometimes they get upset when I say over the air that these players today are better than we were. Well, they don't have the opportunity to see them play every day like I do. There's no question about it. The baseball players today are better than we were. You have some of the greatest players, and that's why this game, you know, it's a shame that the labor issues have to be such a prominent factor. But the talent will always bring the fans out because people love baseball and people want to see great players, and there's certainly a lot of great players around today.
Hawk, who was your first roommate in the major leagues?
Bill Fisher. Bill Fisher was my first roommate, and he was, you know, he just recently was the pitching coach down in Tampa Bay, but Fish was a good guy. Fish also, one time, he maybe still holds the record for consecutive innings without a walk. He had great control, and he also was the guy that threw that home run to Mickey Mantle that he almost hit all the way out of Yankee Stadium. The ball bounced all the way back to Jerry Lumpy at second base. It was supposed to be a high inside fastball, and it was a low inside slider that Mickey just golfed, and Mickey told me that's the hardest ball he ever hit, you know. But he was my first roommate, and I had, you know, the goal back in those days when I first came in was $50,000. I mean, that's if you made $50,000, it's like making 15 or 20 today, you know. I'm talking about mentally. That was the goal. And I never will forget sitting around the clubhouse in Kansas City one day, and I was making the minimum $6,000, you know, and spending 30. But I was sitting around the clubhouse just looking, and I was watching these guys. And my mom had always taught me, don't worry about the money. Go out and have fun, do the job, and the money will follow, you know. And she was right, 100%. But this one particular day, I was sitting around looking around, and I said, boy, there's Jerry Lumpy. He's making $17,500. You know, and there's Manny Jimenez, who's making about $12,000. And, I mean, that was huge money to me, you know? And then all of a sudden, you got to Norm Sieber. Norm was making $25,000. And you're sitting there, and you just, you know, as a kid, you're just letting your mind wander. And then, of course, it started going up a little bit. And then Rocky Colavito joined our club, and Rocky was making about $50,000. He was a great guy. I learned a lot about how to be a major leaguer from Rocky Colavito. One of the things that happened, we were playing the Yankees. In fact, that's actually how the batting glove got started in baseball. We were playing the Yankees, and they was had a right-hander schedule a pitch, and I went out and played 36 holes of golf that day with Ted Bosfield, and I played Gino Cimoli and Sammy Esposito. So I went right from the golf course to the ballpark, and I got a blister on my left hand, you know. But I remembered I had my golf glove in my pants upstairs, so I went upstairs and got it. The Yankees switched. They pitched Whitey Ford, and I hit two home runs, and the next day that's when the Yankees all came out, you know, with golf gloves on, and that's how the hitting glove got started. But after that game that I hit the two home runs, that's the only time we ever drew anybody in Kansas City was when the Yankees were in town. So there were, you know, maybe 40, 50, 60 people outside the locker room when the game was over, and I had somewhere to go, so I was walking through the crowd, not signing any autographs or anything, and all of a sudden I got about halfway through, and I felt this vice, this hand on the back of my neck, just grabbed me, and I started to hit somebody. I turned around, it was Rocky. So he pulled me back into the clubhouse, and he looked at me right in the eye, face to face, and he said, "Let me tell you something, Hawk." He said, "One of these days, you got a chance to be a good player. But those are the people that pay our salaries right out there." He said, "If I ever see you walk by somebody and don't sign that autograph," he said, "I'm going to kick your ass." And he could do it. Rocky could do it. And that got me into the habit. After that, I never turned down an autograph, you know. And even when I was at the Red Sox having some good years from them, I'd walk out sometimes. I'd wait 2 or 3 hours after the game was over so the crowd would thin out. But I'd walk out. There still might be 800 or 900 people out there. And I'd sign every one of them, only because of Rocky Colavito. And he taught me, he and Al Kaline, playing against Al Kaline, who was one of my all-time favorites. Every time you played the Tigers, you learned something as a young player. We used to get in a fight with them all the time, but you learn something. You learn how to compete. And Al Kaline was a tremendous competitor. And he, I remember my first spring training. I was a kid. I ran pretty good. I was on first base, and somebody hit a ball in the right center field. I'm going to just go on into third, you know. Well, I get about 15, 20 feet from the bag, and Don Wirt was playing third base, and he's getting in position to take a throw. So I just know he's decoying me, right? Well, he wasn't decoying me. The ball got there, and I was out by 10 feet. And as I'm getting up and going back over to the first base dugout across the diamond, Kaline's out in right field screaming at me, "You rookie SOB, don't you ever run on me." But that's the way he was. Off the field, Al Kaline's the most genteel, decorated person you'll ever meet. But on that field, when he put that jockstrap on, I'll tell you, he was a tiger, literally and figuratively. And those are some of the things as we're just sitting here BSing, you know, that come back to mind about some of the great players. And I enjoyed playing against Kaline so much. Enjoyed playing with a lot of guys. Catfish Hunter was probably the greatest teammate I ever had. You know, he was a wonderful person. He came up. He was really a young man who was unique. From the time he got to the big leagues, you know, he could throw strikes and he could throw it right through a teacup. And he had a tremendous awareness of the game itself at 19 or 20 years old. I remember going in the year that Frank Robinson won the Triple Crown. Cat was about 19 or 20, and Frank was a Triple Crown winner in 66, and Cat struck him out 4 times. He was one of those guys that when he didn't throw real hard and didn't have real good stuff, but he had great control and he had a great heart and he had a great stomach. I mean, he wasn't afraid of anything. And he'd go out there, and he would, even when he didn't have his good stuff or his good control, he'd still keep you in the ball game. And I've always said that if I had to have one guy win a game for my family's life, it would have been Catfish Hunter. And, you know, that club that we had in Kansas City that came out here to Oakland that won 5 consecutive divisional titles and 3 consecutive World Championships, we all knew that was going to be a hell of a club. We all knew that. And overall, after all this time has passed, that's still the smartest playing club I have ever seen in my 40 years around the major leagues. They'd go out there like true champions, and they would go out there, and they didn't try to beat you every day, because you can't play a 162-game schedule and try to beat somebody every day. But what you can do is allow the other team to beat themselves. And that's what the Oakland A's did. They went out there. They just made all the plays. They didn't make any mental mistakes, and they sit back, and they'd score some runs, and all of a sudden, somewhere in that 9 innings, the other team's going to make a mistake, and they just jumped all over you. And that was a great ball club, truly a great ball club.
Boy, what a pleasure. You make my day for me. Thanks, Hawk.
Okay, big guy.
Perfect. Well, you're the best.